This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is Mrs. LaGreca, Don's mom. Time for Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg, 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you, Mrs. LaGreca, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. Michael K., Peter Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. Also, if you haven't seen on social media, Don LaGreca got a very good report from his doctor today.
Big news.
And Don's trying to take it slowly, so he is going to join the show at 5 o'clock.
Yeah!
For the final 2 hours of the show. Wants to take little baby steps, Peter. Doesn't need to go 4 hours right out of the gate.
The show's popping.
So he's ready. He's got a lot of opinions about a lot of things.
I can't arouse a woman.
Well, I don't know if I'll come out of the gate with that.
Well, that's a known. That's a given.
I'm sorry that I'm passionate.
We've got Dana White at 4:30, big UFC fight this Saturday that you could see on ESPN Plus.
So. Oh, you're talking about the Masvidal.
Yeah, Masvidal.
Masvidal.
Yeah, so that should be good. Looking forward to that. Obviously, baseball. What's happening now is that the players on social media are attacking Rob Manfred. You know, he is the face and the representative to them of evil. And I guess you've got to have somebody that you direct all your enmity to, and they've chosen it to be Rob Manfred. Which
well,
he's a good
one to choose.
It's the wise one, I guess, for them to choose, but it's also very disingenuous because a lot of these, you know, a lot of these players that are spouting off, you know, some of the owners of the teams that they play for are responsible for this work stoppage. A small market team, medium market team, you don't know which owners are hawks or which are not. So they're all taking shots at Manfred, who is simply a reflection of the owner's desires. You know, he doesn't make these demands on a whim, on his own. He takes orders from the owners. He works for the owners. And, you know, everybody keeps, you know, some people going and tweeting at me and saying, you know, what about the best interest of baseball? Listen, that's in your fairy tale land. That's in the unicorn and rainbow land. It's not what a commissioner does. You think that's what Roger Goodell does for the good of football? No. He represents 32 owners. Adam Silver represents 30 owners. Gary Bettman represents the owners in hockey. That's it. That's what they do. It's not a grand poobah that represents the whole sport. I mean, we'd love it to be that. And the last guy that tried to do that, Faye Vincent, got driven out of the sport. Owners aren't going to take that. You work for us, and you're going to go best interest of the sport. No, it's best interest of us. And once you deviate from that, you lose your job. So, hey, listen, if it's convenient for the players to show all their hate toward Rob Manfred, good, go for it. I'm sure he doesn't care. I'm sure he doesn't care because he's representing the desires and the wants of the owners. The owners are the ones that want this. The owners are the ones that desire this. The owners are the ones that are telling him, no, we don't want to raise the tax threshold. We don't want to. I mean, if it was up to him, don't you think he doesn't want this on his permanent record?
But yeah, it's
going to be on his record. Just like
missed games.
Just like losing the World Series in 94 was on Bud Selig's record. But the bottom line, though, Peter, Bud Selig's in the Hall of Fame, right? And the owners manipulated that. And you know why? Because he did the job that they wanted him to do. So the players can get as mad as Manfred as they want. But if Manfred delivers the deal that the owners want, he's fine. He'll have a job as long as he wants it. But rest assured, everybody, we're not going to sit here for the next however many months and continue to give updates on negotiations. They're not even talking now anyway. They're hoping that they could restart tomorrow. But who knows? Really, who knows? Obviously, it's not a good situation. It's terrible for baseball. It's mostly terrible for baseball fans. Players will rebound. The owners will rebound. There'll be baseball again at some point. But fans that want to have their mind taken off of what's going on in the world right now, well, they don't have that. They will not have that. Opening day, which is always a benchmark on the sports calendar has been cavalierly just tossed aside. So that's where we are right now.
Like a piece of garbage.
And or piece of metal. We'll see.
Beautiful.
We'll see exactly where this leads. Any new information that comes about, well, that's what we'll give you. But at this point, nothing has changed from when we left the air yesterday, except that the players are teeing off on Manfred, and you know that's going to be the sport for a while. So they're going to try to change the public perception and say it's all on Manfred, and the owners. You know, it's almost like a manager of a of an analytic-driven team that has to sit there and take the slings and arrows and the hatred from fans when he's executing what the numbers are telling him to execute. That's his job. And when you ask people in baseball, well, why don't you put the people that are in the analytics department up there to answer, and they go, well, that's why the manager makes all that money. And that's why Rob Manfred makes all that money. That's why Rob Manfred is wealthy enough to belong to Wingfoot Golf Course and play there and whatever and be a member. Because he is the guy who's going to be the fall guy for the owners. The owners don't want to be the ones that are in the crosshairs. They pay Rob Manfred for that, and that's exactly what he's doing. He will take the hits, and hopefully cooler heads will prevail and we'll have baseball at some point. You know, we talked about this yesterday and didn't have much time because yesterday, obviously, you know, the first two series of the baseball season were canceled. That was kind of the big story, but it's a big topic of conversation with Joe Shane, the Giant GM.
Joe Schoen.
Saying that everything is on the table, including whether or not they trade Saquon Barkley. And people are coming down on different sides of this argument. Well, the main part of the argument is this, everybody. The Giants are in cap hell. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big Giant fan, Peter. And it is his contention that Dave Gettleman is the worst GM in the history of New York sports.
I like this take. Keep going.
He said, if you think about it, he was there for 4 years. I believe it was 4 years. He said, so here's what I would like you to do. Take a look at this Giant roster and tell me the sure keepers on the roster, the sure keepers. And I guess you could come up with Andrew Thomas.
That would be the
right?
one.
The left tackle. There's really no one that stands out and just grabs you by the throat on the defensive end. You know, Blake Martinez was a nice guy. Seemed like a good player, but was hurt. So you wouldn't say that he's one of the best out there. Is Daniel Jones a keeper? We don't know. I mean, that will eventually take him out of worst GM of all time category if Daniel Jones actually does reach his potential and is a Giants franchise quarterback, because that will be the signature pick of Dave Gettleman's time. Now, I argued with my friend, well, I don't know if he's worse than Phil Jackson. I mean, we go back and forth on this. Could actually lead to a Don List at some point. Brody Van Wagenen certainly didn't cover himself in glory as the Met GM, but Dave Gettleman did build the team that went to a Super Bowl with the Carolina Panthers. And when you look at what he's left behind, the salary cap mess that he's left behind, you would think that if a team is in salary cap hell,
right,
that they'd have a hell of a lot of players that would have to be keepers. Where are the keepers on the Giants?
Well,
where are they?
That's the amazing part of it. How do you get here and have so little to show for it? And then one of the few players that at least we know, Michael, the thing about Saquon is we've kind of already decided the pick didn't make sense. Like, Don's argument has been won. We know that. But at least he's the one guy that, you know, from a pure talent standpoint, is incredibly talented. And you don't even know if it makes sense that he should stick around.
Right. And that is certainly the point of conversation today. The Giants have already cut Kyle Rudolph, another one of the brilliant signings by Gettleman.
He
signed him to a two-year, $12 million deal. His medicals came back awful. The Giants could have easily have gotten out of that contract. They didn't. They decided to honor the contract, which sounds nice, but it's bad business. Kyle Rudolph, you know, was a really good player for the Vikings. Never did anything for the Giants. Couldn't get separation. He was never the same after, you know, the foot problems. So he gets cut. They say $5 million on the cap there. Also, they cut Devontae Booker. So here's some of what people are saying. Here's Dan Orlovsky on whether or not the Giants should listen to offers on Saquon Barkley.
Saquon's still a tremendous talent, but the reality is in the last three seasons, Saquon has missed 20 games. As a tailback in the NFL, that doesn't happen. In those three seasons, he's rushed for a total of 1,600 yards. That's just not good enough. And I understand it's with a bad offensive line, but that offensive line's not going to automatically get better this year. So figure out if you can get trade value for him.
Now, Dave Rothenberg, our resident lunatic, and you can hear him on DPHO and Rothenberg from 5 to 8 every Monday through Friday. This is his take on what they should do with Saquon.
Very little chance the Giants keep Barkley past this next year. So even if you're not going to, unless you're going to get nothing for him, why would you not deal him? If I give you another, even if it's a decent third round pick, if you're not going to keep him past this season, why would you not deal him? You can draft a running back with that pick, guy that you can have for 4+ years.
If you look at the history, Peter, of football, recent football, and see the last 10 Super Bowl winning teams, here were the running backs, okay? Leonard Fournette, Damian Williams, Sony Michel, LeGarrette Blount again, C.J. Anderson, LeGarrette Blount again, Percy Harvin, Ray Rice, Ahmad Bradshaw, and this year for the second time in the career, it was against Sony Michel. None of them really are big-time, big-money players. They're just not. And that's the argument that Don always made. Why would you waste that second pick on a guy like Saquon? Now, you can't deny that Saquon Barkley is an exemplary person, a great representative of the organization, but you know, this isn't the nice football league. This is the National Football League. And if he can't stay healthy, and even when he's in there, I've always said this about Saquon, and maybe it's because of the shoddy offensive line that the Giants have put around him. He's one of those guys. No gain, no gain, no gain, minus one, plus one, no gain, no gain, plus 25. That the plus 25, that lights you up, but then no gain, no gain. I mean, it's feast or famine, and most of it's famine. Most of it's famine. So I never understood the obsession with Saquon. You can say, well, that's pretty much what Barry Sanders did as well. But, you know, Barry Sanders didn't win anything with the Lions either.
Well,
so it's all pretty to watch when he breaks off the 40-yard gain, Peter. But when you look at it and he's gaining under 3 yards a carry, that means that you're punting on fourth down.
Well, we've had this conversation a lot, and you brought that up, that comparison. Obviously, that's the person people think of. But it's almost ridiculous to even bring that up, to be honest with you, because Saquon has a couple things working against him in that conversation. Number one is availability, you know, and just missing too many games year to year, sadly. You know, I mean, the 2020 season was a complete wash. He missed three this year. He missed three in year two. And on top of that, Michael, his rookie year was 1,300 yards. He dropped off to 1,000 the second year, and then, you know, since then his high is 593. If you were to look at Barry Sanders' entire career, Michael, he never went below 1,100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So even having that conversation where the example, the comp you want to give, Michael, is Barry Sanders, and you say, well, Barry Sanders never won anything. Barry Sanders was also, you know, at this point, with all due respect to Saquon, at this point, light years ahead. Four years in, Barry Sanders had done 1,400 yards, 1,300 yards, 1,600 yards, 1,350. Touchdowns, 14, 13, 16, 9. So it's apples and wrenches, to be honest, to even make any of the comparisons in that regard. So, listen, it's tough. He's a guy whose jersey you see all over the stadium, who kids love, who you'd be happy to have be the front-facing person for a very long time. He's going to be a Walter Payton Award nominee every year kind of guy, right? That's who he is. But you do have to think about if he's not part of your future, are you just going to give him away in a year?
See, that's the key, because let's say he has a good year this year or a decent year, stays healthy, and then you keep him. It's going to cost you a lot of money. And do you want to put that much money into the running back position? I mean, how many running backs in the NFL do you just have to have? The guy in Tennessee, you just have to have.
There's two or three that you, honestly, maybe three or four that you really go, yes, oh, please. Otherwise, you know, you plug in guys like my guy in Washington, Antonio Gibson, who no one knows much about, and they do a fantastic job. I'm with you. It has become that. It's strange, but that is one of those positions that is not really necessary to spend a lot of money.
I mean, look at the Rams. Stars all around, but Sony Michel and Cam Akers would not be looked at as stars. And they won the Super Bowl. Now, Ralph Rocchiano, a guy I really respect, wrote for SNY. He made the case that they should keep Barkley. He said the coaching staff of the Giants needs to know what they have in Daniel Jones. They won't be able to find out. They stripped the talent around him away. Really? You can't get another running back for less than half the price? I think you can. I don't know if Saquon Barkley there is going to, you know, determine whether or not you could tell if Daniel Jones is a good quarterback. Ralph also points out the value of keeping a guy who will be another year removed from his ACL injury, who isn't that far removed from winning Rookie of the Year, and is far greater than dealing him for what, at this moment, would probably be a mid-round pick. But you also factor in the salary cap situation they're in. So I think he's owed $7.2 million this year, and that would all come off the cap. And they might be 10 over the cap, but they've got to get way, way under that. They've got to sign their draft picks. They got two first-rounders. They've got to be able to be somewhat active in free agency. I mean, Evan Ingram's probably not going to be brought back, so that's another offensive player. Sterling Shepard might be cut to save money. I'm sorry. That's where they are right now. They're in a situation where they're going to have to do drastic things. Now, if you think the Giants are going to be a good team this year, you know, you roll the dice and you keep Barkley because you got him under contract anyway, and the 7-2 isn't a huge number. And then if you decide not to bring him back, you don't get anything for him. Okay, you don't bring him back. But are they really going to be a playoff team this year? Now, you certainly can't say in the NFC East that they most definitely can't. But are they as good as the Cowboys? No. The Eagles should take another step forward, you would think. So are they going to be as good as the Eagles? No. So it's a toss-up now with Washington because Washington doesn't have a quarterback. What if Washington goes out and gets a good quarterback?
Well, if Washington gets a good quarterback, we're not even having all due respect, we're not even having a conversation about next year, I don't think.
Right. So this Giant fans want results now. I don't blame them. You know, they've seen enough bad football, and maybe Brian Daboll is going to be just an incredible magician and make it work and turn things around in 1 year. I doubt it. I don't think they have enough talent. They simply don't have enough talent. They don't have a front line. They don't have an offensive line. Their offensive line essentially is Andrew Thomas. Who else you bringing back? You bringing any of them back? Probably not. They've got a lot of holes to fill. And you still don't know what you have in Daniel Jones. And I think they're making the right move. They have hinted at it. If they pick up his fifth-year rookie contract option, that's $21 guaranteed million. Why do it? Because if he goes out and plays great, you're going to sign him to a long-term deal anyway. And if you can't come to an agreement on the long-term deal, then you're just going to franchise him anyway. Do that. Why pick up the $21 million? He's coming off what seemed like a pretty serious neck injury. They say he's going to be fine. And the Giants have an advantage here because it's a new coaching staff. They're going to be able to have one more mini camp than other teams. So they'll be able to meet in April, and they'll be able to see exactly where he is. But I think it would be foolhardy to pick up the fifth-year option on Daniel Jones. He has shown nothing that you would say that this is the guy that we definitely want to be here. Maybe under an offensive guru like Brian Daboll, he finds that next gear, like Josh Allen did after that first year. Maybe he does. And at that point, you address it then. But don't go in for $21 million. I mean, look what the Panthers did. They made the trade for Sam Darnold, and then they picked up the fifth-year option. Don't you think they wish they didn't do that? If they had just waited, they would have cut Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold wouldn't even be on the team. Now they're into him for over $20 million. It's lunacy. So at this point, I know it's early, the Giants are doing and saying the right thing. Now, the one variable also that you have to consider, Peter, I think the Giant organization and the owners love them some Saquon Barkley. But if you gave the job to Joe Shane and the owners seem like they really like Brian Flores more than they like Daboll, they allowed Shane to pick the coach. Well, they got to allow Shane to put the team together. And despite the fact that Saquon's a great guy, sorry, if Shane and Daboll think they're better off cutting him and having the cap space, then that's what you have to do, no matter how much the team likes him or not. It's not about the most likable team in the world. In fact, some of the teams that have won Super Bowls in history are reprehensible. You don't like them at all. So the fact that this guy is a great representative for the team, seems like a really good dude. I'm sorry. It's a business. And right now, the business of Giant football has been bad. They've got to change. They've got to change dramatically. Mm. There's not enough in the cupboard, so you need money to spend. And you can get a running back that should approximate the same things that Saquon gives you at really almost a quarter of the price. You should be able to do that. You just should. Just to hear Shane, this is from yesterday, about open to anything.
I mean, I'm open to everything. Like, whether it's trading player for player, you know, I'll listen to anybody. If it's trading, you know, a couple players, you know, I'm not going to say the entire roster, you know, we're open for business on the entire roster. But if anybody's going to call and they're interested in any of our players, I'll certainly listen.
Now, there you go. He's going to listen. And that's the right thing to say. Don't lock into anybody. Don't fall in love with anybody. And you know, Dable's doing the due diligence. He's talking with all the players. He seems like he likes Kadarius Toney a lot. If you read the reviews today, he's had a lot of conversations. Toney sends him a lot of his new music. And they have FaceTimed a lot. So, good. Let the coach get to know all these guys. But what they are personality-wise has nothing to do with what they're going to do on the field. Just nothing. And I think they realize that. They seem like they're smart guys. Let's give them a chance. It's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. We've got the Knicks against the Sixers. They got slapped around in the fourth quarter against the Sixers. That was in the Garden on Sunday. They're in Philly tonight. That's a 7:30 start. You can see it on ESPN. You can see it on MSG. And you can hear it right here on 98.7 ESPN. So a 7 o'clock pregame show, 7:30, is the tip-off for the Knicks and the Sixers. In hockey, you've got St. Louis in New York against the Rangers. That game's on TNT. It's a 7:30 start, 7 o'clock pregame, and you can hear it on 10:50 a.m., our sister station, 10:50. The pregame's at 7. They drop the puck at 7:30. That's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. All right, so we have a lot to do. Want to take your phone calls on the Giants. We'll talk a little bit more baseball as well, break down some basketball, and we do have Dana White at 4:30. Don LaGreca returns to the show at 5 o'clock. So we got a big show. A lot of entertainment, almost too much, but we'll make it work, and we'll do it in 4 hours and for 4 hours until 7 o'clock when Nick Basketball takes over. Kay, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Don LaGreca rejoins the fray at 5 o'clock. Got a good meeting with his doctor today. Things have gone well. Lungs are good after the COVID pneumonia. And he's going to take it slow at first with 2 hours today. And then we'll see how it goes, and we'll see tomorrow.
I expressed this on the call. My one concern is he capable of moving slowly?
No.
That's the thing. I don't know if he has.
What if he goes into one of those toots?
Yeah, I think once he's in, he's in. So we got to be careful. We got to keep him calm. And he already said he has a lot of strong opinions on the baseball.
And you know what that means? He's going to go off. We got to root for his lung capacity.
I wonder where Don falls in this thing.
Yeah, he didn't tell us. He didn't tip his hand.
Oh, this is big news for you, Michael.
What's this? Tell me.
According to Twitter here, Kim Kardashian declared legally single in divorce proceedings with Kanye West.
What does that mean?
Wow!
It means she was petitioning to be single, even though the divorce, I guess, wasn't legit. I've never honestly heard of this.
Isn't single just a state of mind?
I know. That's what I find fascinating about this, is that, you know, when people get divorced, the proceedings often take a long time. But after X amount of time, the person considers themselves single, and because their marriage is over. It seems to me, and I'm making this up, that she really wanted the legal declaration of single. So, I don't know, it's to protect herself so people don't defame her or something? I don't know.
Maybe, you know, Pete Davidson said, listen, I'm only going to date you if you're single.
Oh, you think there's a chance Pete Davidson is like very Michael Kay and was just,
right.
I want to go by the rules here.
Right, I don't want to be dating a married woman.
I want to make an honest woman of you or an unhonest woman of you.
Interesting stuff that you're bringing to the table here. Certainly something to think about. Let's go to Brian in Albany. Brian?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. You?
I'm doing great. Hey, I'm a big fan of the show. I appreciate you guys having me on. My first time talking on the radio.
Thank you. Welcome aboard.
Hey, so I just want to make a comment about the Giants. Peter mentioned earlier, like, what has Daniel Jones done to deserve a spot? And I just wanted to really agree with that statement. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but coming out of college, he was only highly regarded by the Giants because him and Eli shared the same quarterback coach or trainer.
Right.
And I feel like he's holding down that spot mainly because of who he knows and not necessarily what he's done on the field. I just feel like that's really unfair to Giants fans and just everyone in general. We should get a better quarterback.
First of all, I think that's a little unfair. The Giants did not take him because he was, at Eli's quarterback camp and had worked with David Cutcliffe. No, they liked what they saw. I think they also liked the fact that he was a clone of Eli, the way he talked and everything, and that Cutcliffe, was the coach for Eli and then was the coach for Jones, but they didn't select him because he had worked at, the Madden quarterback academy. Stop. I mean, the guy has shown some glimpses. I mean, I'm not convinced, but because it's a quarterback situation where, Aaron Rodgers not walking through that door. Russell Wilson's not walking through that door unless you give up those two first-round draft picks. Do you want to do that for 33-year-old quarterback without an offensive line? Because you'd be giving away the two ways that you could actually make the offensive line better this year. This is a process. They are not going to turn it around right away. So you might as well see what you have in Daniel Jones. During the time of the draft, we all couldn't believe that he selected Daniel Jones with the sixth pick because he also had the 17th pick in the first round. And most people think he would have lasted to the 17th pick, but he said that he had intelligence, that there were teams that would have taken him. Now, nobody's going to admit that now, but there are a lot of people at that time, Peter, who said that there were teams that really liked Daniel Jones a lot. Now, it looks like a terrible pick now because he hasn't played out. But we'll see. You did waste a sixth pick in the first round with him. Pick.
Listen, at the same time, can we be fair about one thing? They certainly got it more right than Washington did.
That's right.
Washington got Haskins, and people thought that was, that might be the guy you want is Haskins.
Ripped the Giants for not taking him.
I take the 3 years with Daniel Jones. Thank you.
Now, you don't know if Daniel Jones is going to stay healthy. You don't know if he hasn't been healthy because of the porous offensive line. But he's got a decent arm. He certainly runs very, very well. And in today's NFL, you need a quarterback that is mobile. So there are things there that you can like. I think what we're grading him on is, he was the sixth pick in the first round. Well, we got to get over that. Now let's see what you got. Because there's nobody out there that's going to come in and that is going to be demonstrably better. And what are you going to bring in? Ryan Fitzpatrick? For what reason? I didn't understand when Washington did it last year. And Washington actually thought it had a pretty good team.
Yeah, I never understand that logic. To me, it is one of the most foolhardy things in professional sports that if you're trying to have a football season in which you actually win football games, you bring in a stopgap to just play the position. It makes no sense, Michael, unless you want to lose games. If your hope is we know we have no shot and we would rather be 2-14 than 6-10 or now 2-15 and 6-11. Short of that, I don't think that's ever the move.
Yeah, it didn't make sense when they did it. They gave him too much money, and you ended up playing Heinicke anyway. Now, do they go into the next season with Heinicke, or do they want to upgrade? Those are the questions they have to ask.
I think it's very clear they want to upgrade. The question is, who is going to actually be available from this group? I mean, Russell Wilson was on TV 2 days ago and was asked about the idea of going to D.C. and poo-pooed it. And said, I love being in Seattle. So he may just be playing the game. And Russell Wilson is the kind of guy who's going to play the game properly. And even though he had the weird Twitter scrub, he's not the kind of guy to disrespect the franchise he's with. So we'll see. And, the real chip in the NFL this offseason that probably will get resolved, I'm guessing will get resolved this year, is Deshaun Watson.
Maybe. I mean, Lovie Smith says he wants it done sooner rather than later, but it all depends on the legal system. So I guess April 1st is a big date where they're going to go to court and see. Maybe they can change his mind. Maybe everything gets cleared and Lovie Smith said, well, why don't you play here? Although I don't think he likes the front office and the owner. That's the deal. 1-800-919-3776. Give you the latest on the baseball, basketball today as well. We've got Dana White coming up at 4:30. Don LaGreca rejoins the show at 5 o'clock. You know that Don is so big now, Peter, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this.
What?
One of the top stories on the New York Post website is Don LaGreca returning to air.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking. Hold on.
Print that! Tweet that!
Yeah, and they are, and they did.
I'm pretty far down the page. I don't see it.
Those are facts!
Well, look at Twitter. Call up New York Post Sports, and it's one of the main stories. Just go to the Twitter. Go to the little
Well, I wasn't on Twitter. I went to their news, to the website, okay?
Well, maybe it hasn't been updated yet, but it's there's big stories out.
Oh, well, you know, I'm going to quit.
No, this is wrong. This is absolutely awful.
Why?
The headline on the New York Post Sports page down the side.
Yeah.
ESPN co-host returning to Michael K show after hospitalization. Yeah, they can't even use his name in the headline.
Wait, that's not true, is it?
Swear to God, your name's in it.
No way.
Yes, your name is in it.
That's awful.
Now, when you click the article,
do you want to know what this show is without Michael? It's called The Show.
Now, when you click the article, it has a handsome picture of Don and says Don LaGreca returning to Michael K show after hospitalization. But, I mean, can you believe this? Andrew, this is troubling.
It really is. I didn't actually think of that when I saw it, because I just know, it's Don that they're talking about. It didn't dawn on me that they chose to not use his name.
I mean, guys, can I just throw this out there? Please, any of you people who do these things, who write articles or do headlines for a website, please, when someone's making a return from a health scare, they don't want their name to be co-host. They want their name. Don may not say it. He'll probably come back very modest. He can't have a rant about this. But I'm sick. There's a headline about our guy returning from a serious health scare, and the only name in it is still Michael. I mean, it's almost like if it was an obituary for me or Don, God forbid, our name wouldn't be listed. It would just say Michael K. Show co-host. That would be our name on the tombstone. K-Show co-host, 1979 to 2049.
Sometimes I think you're garbage, Michael.
Or 2063, whatever, 2072, however long it can last.
It's an awful look. It really is. I don't know. I can't even joke about it. It's just terrible.
But terrible. When you click it,
doesn't play.
When you click it, it's got him and his name.
But before the click, the thing that they think is going to make you click, the clickbait, is my name rather than Don.
I can almost hear Michael smiling. I think he almost weirdly is enjoying this.
No, I'm not. Although you don't have to hear me. Just look at, yes. I've got a bemused look on my face, but it's a little bit, it's weird. It's weird.
It's not what you want.
It's not what you
want, Joe.
All right, let's take a brief time out as we try to towel off about this. It's Kay Rosenberg and that other co-host soon to come too, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
The giant GM,
Joe Schoening,
saying that everything is on the table, including whether or not they trade Saquon Barkley. And the main part of the argument is this, everybody. The Giants are in cap hell. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big Giant fan, Peter, and it is his contention that Dave Gettleman is the worst GM in the history of New York sports. He said, if you think about it, he was there for 4 years. Take a look at this Giant roster and tell me the sure keepers on the roster. I guess you could come up with Andrew Thomas, the left tackle. When you look at what he's left behind, you would think that if a team is in salary cap hell,
right,
that they'd have a hell of a lot of players that would have to be keepers. Where are the keepers on the Giants?
The Michael K. Show.
Oh, sorry. I was just fixing my dentures.
On 98.7 ESPN.
We've got to start a new rule here. And it's going to be difficult, though. But I need the backing of Andrew. If, in fact, we're somewhat dubious about whether or not somebody is old or not, I'm just going to hang up. And if it's really an old person, I apologize to you in advance. But if it's somebody trying to play a game, well, then I don't apologize. So I think I'm going to do that from now on.
You sure? You don't want to play along?
Because I don't think it's that clever. I mean, that guy, did that sound clever to you?
No.
I should have hung up when he said, I just fixed my dentures. No, well, you take care of that click.
Yeah, it was not clever. The denture thing is I think, too cliche. I think that was the giveaway for me, that was not real. But, all right, I'll follow your lead on that. That's
no, no. You produced the show. If you want me to play along, I'll play along. You're the boss here.
Yeah. I guess you have to go call by call. If you think there's something funny there, then you see it through. But I wouldn't go with a blanket ruling right out of the gate that they're all getting hung up on. We'll see.
All right. It's time now for the 98.7 ESPN Hoops Update, brought to you by Corona. Live in the moment. Live la vida más fina with an ice-cold Corona. For 21+, relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois. Good news on Kevin Durant. He is not on the injury report, which means that he will be playing in tomorrow's game against Miami. And let me tell you something, everybody. Let me just break it for the people here. It can't come soon enough. They're in trouble. They played well yesterday after getting embarrassed by the Raptors at home. Then they played really, 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 really tough yesterday in Toronto, but they still lost by 1 point. So right now, the Nets are in eighth, and they're in the eighth spot. And they're 3 games behind the Raptors for the 7th spot. Now, the Nets have played 63 games. So that means there are 19 games remaining. Now, in order for them to get into the playoffs, not into the play-in, they've got to catch the Celtics. The Celtics are 5 back of the Heat for the number 1 spot, so they're in the 6th spot, which means that the Nets are 4.5 games behind the Celtics to get out of the play-in and get into the playoffs. I don't think they're making up 4.5 games. Now, if you want to look and think, you know, glass half empty, well, the 11th spot, which would mean out of the play-in, the Nets are just 3 games ahead of the Wizards. But what I would tell people that are worried about that, the Wizards are not getting Kevin Durant back. They're not making a trade for Kevin Durant. The Nets are getting Kevin Durant back. So that is a huge, huge difference maker. Now, it would be great at some point if people smarten up and change the somewhat indecipherable rules in New York City and if Kyrie Irving can play the rest of the way. But the way it looks right now, even with Durant back, and it still looks like Simmons is a while away, now he's dealing with a back issue. Well, I don't think they're going to make the 6th spot. I think they're going to have to play in to the playoffs. Now, I believe the play-in is the playoffs. I do. Just like I believe the one-game wild card, you play one-game wild card, you've made the playoffs. In baseball, you play in the play-in tournament, you've made the playoffs. But to make up 4.5 games on the Boston Celtics, I don't see them doing it. Celtics are playing very, very well. I don't think it's going to happen.
Me neither. On the flip side, you're right. You feel pretty good about them not being able to fall out. I don't see the Wizards making a move. So, I mean, the Nets should be able to hold there and play in that 8-7 game. But, Michael, that would mean they got to play if it were to hold as is, because they're 3 games back on Toronto.
Right.
It's not like it's tied with Toronto. The 3 games back on Toronto. So if it holds as is, Michael, that means they got to go play a game in Toronto. And they could win that and advance to the playoffs or lose that and then play a game against the winner of Charlotte Atlanta.
And remember, if the rules don't change, if they play a game in Toronto, they will be without Kyrie Irving.
Correct.
So they could change in New York. They might not change in Canada.
No, Canada's been very strict basically for a while now. They've been significantly more strict than here for a minute.
Right.
Empty stadiums, et cetera. I mean, the Raptors have spent the second part of the season essentially playing in front of no crowd.
Now you can't say, well, they just lost 2 straight to the Raptors, so they wouldn't be able to win. Well, they lost 2 straight to the Raptors without Kevin Durant. So they played very tough yesterday without Kyrie Irving and without Durant and without Simmons. So you would think that if this is the way the standings finish up, I'm not saying that it will, then the Nets will go into Toronto with Durant and Simmons at least. Whether or not they have Kyrie, that's a governmental decision. Governmental decision. Speaking of government decisions, did you see what the governor of Florida did today?
No.
So he was speaking in a school. This is Ron DeSantis.
I call him San Durantis, but go ahead.
So he's speaking in a school, and the kids are lined up against the blackboard behind where he's going to speak, and they all have masks on. He started yelling at them. You've got to stop this COVID theater. This is ridiculous. You don't have to keep the mask on. If you want to, that's fine. But, these are kids he's, like, tearing into. These are kind of mixed messages everybody's getting. It's unbelievable. The governor of a state is yelling at kids that actually have masks on.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, he's pretty consistent. He's never believed in masks.
But that's cool. But these are kids.
Yeah, but he's a jackwagon, with all due respect. With all due respect.
Now, the Knicks will play tonight against the Sixers. The Knicks, as we speak, are in the 12th spot. And if anybody thinks they have a legitimate shot to get into the play, well, good for you. I'm glad that you could live your life so glass half full, because I can't. They're 4 games back in the loss column from the Atlanta Hawks, who are in 10th. And they're actually 3 games back in the loss column from the 11th seed, the Washington Wizards. They're just not good right now. And you're playing Jericho Sims, and you've decided to play Jericho Sims right now in a situation where he's got to face a guy like Joel Embiid. So I don't have a problem with it. So he fouled out on Sunday. So did Mitchell Robinson trying to guard Embiid. You can't. Those guys just don't. They don't have the skill level of Joel Embiid. But at least Jericho Sims is learning. Now, one other thing I wanted to say about the Knicks, and I didn't get a chance to say it the other day with all the baseball stuff. You know, I'm sitting there. I'm watching Emmanuel Quickley, who is essentially their second point guard now, with Derrick Rose out and Kemba Walker gone. Alec Burks, to me, is not a true point guard, but he's starting in that position. And then you've got Emmanuel Quickley. And Quickley had a pretty good game on Sunday because he was driving to the basket. But take a look at Quickley. He shoots the three as if his last name is Curry. He doesn't just shoot right behind the line. He shoots 4 feet behind the line. And his, I'm no Kyle Korver, but his whole thing is off, man. He leans into the shot as if he's pushing it forward. You take a look at his three-point numbers this year. They're dreadful. Dreadful. I like the fact that he's fast and can push the pace and could actually get to the basket. He made some nice decisions while he was in midair, to kick it out to the corner. He would have had more assists if the Knicks actually hit shots. That's all well and good, but you've got to rein him in a little bit. You know, he comes up, well, he's a three-point shooter. No. Steph Curry's a three-point shooter. Seth Curry is a three-point shooter. The way Emmanuel Quickley shoots, he's not a three-point shooter. He's a great free-throw shooter, so get to the line, get fouled, and get your points that way. But take a look at how he leans forward, almost at a 45-degree angle, when he's launching his shots. I don't look at him as a point guard. I just don't. I kind of look at him as a hybrid off guard. But,
I hear that.
The Sunday loss, he had 8 for 8 for free throws. He's one of the best free throw shooters in the game. And he was actually 3 for 7 from the three-point line. But take a look. He's under 30% for the season. Been dreadful. And it's like they've given him this incredibly, insanely long leash. He shoots without a conscience. He has not earned that right. And the injury to Grimes, which at the time seemed unfortunate, now it's really terrible because he'd be getting some really serious time. And they sent McBride down to the G League. So those are your two point guards. And you want to know why the Knicks always lose in the fourth quarter? They don't have a real point guard. That's why they lose in the fourth quarter. And you can say, well, they play well for the first three quarters with the point guards they have. It's a different animal. Even Tom Thibodeau said that. It's a completely different animal in the fourth quarter. You can't sit there and go, it's the same in the fourth quarter as in the first quarter. They don't even play defense in the first quarter. It's almost like a quasi-all-star game. They don't come close to playing as the intensity they play in the fourth quarter. You have to make good decisions in the fourth quarter. The Knicks don't have a point guard. That's why the re-injury or the continuation of the injury of Derrick Rose was so big. Because if you really did want to make an aborted run at getting into the play-in, well, that was your only chance because he's a legitimate point guard. You don't have a legitimate point guard. That's job one for Leon Rose and company during the offseason. You've got to get a real point guard. They've been searching forever. They just don't have that guy. Let's go to the phones.
Go ahead.
Let's go to Chris in Philadelphia. Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. What's up, man?
Nothing. I just wanted to say, you know, first of all, I'm incredibly depressed about the Knicks. I don't know if I'm more depressed about that or the lockout. It's such a shame that the Mets finally have money, and now a handful of owners in the league decide to hold the whole game hostage so he can't spend it. But whatever. I do have proof, I think, incontrovertible evidence that Michael is thrilled that
the
headline about Don only has his name.
This better be incontrovertible. It better be incontrovertible.
Okay. On Don's birthday, Michael's tweet. I don't remember. I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, I've been lucky to have him sit beside me for all these years. A normal person would just say, I've been lucky to sit beside him. Because he's the subject of the tweet. It's his birthday. But on his birthday, Michael has to turn it around and make sure that everyone knows Don is the one sitting beside me and made it all about himself. So I definitely
I see
that as a definite sign.
I love you, but if you think that's incontrovertible, wow. I mean, maybe it was awkward phrasing, but I was trying to say how much I love the guy in that. So I saw a couple of other people say that too. Well, I don't know how that was about me. I've been lucky to have this guy sit next to me. That's all. For 20 years. It was an homage to the guy.
Good Chris, for me.
You got here's your homework assignment, Christopher. Look up incontrovertible.
Cuz that
Come
wasn't
back
it
to me.
You.
That was not incontrovertible. The fact that, you know, it's in my contract that once I leave the show for the next 10 years it's still called the Michael K Show, that's incontrovertible.
Excuse me?
Yeah. What's his face? It's like a rock, Dick Clark rocking New Year's Eve.
Right. He's rocking. He hasn't been rocking for a while. On TV.
So he's saying that it was Don's birthday and you said,
I've been lucky to have this guy sitting next to me for the last 20 years.
As opposed to saying,
I've been lucky to sit next to this guy. That's not incontrovertible.
Oh, what?
Oh, come on. You can't truly believe that.
Well, you were saying, I've been lucky enough to have him as my sidekick.
I didn't say that. If I had said that, then that's incontrovertible.
So you're saying you just said he's my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I agree with you. It's not incontrovertible. It could be controverted.
Let's go to Darlene in Georgia. What's up, Darlene?
Hi, Darlene.
Hi, guys. I'm so excited to get to talk to y'all. I love baseball, and in particular, I love the New York Yankees, and I love New York City. And I've been to New York 3 or 4 times now, never been able to go to a Yankees game. I was coming Memorial Day 2020, and we all know what happened with the pandemic.
Right.
And so my tickets got canceled. I have tickets for opening day against Boston. That's the whole reason I'm flying all the way from Monroe, Georgia to New York City.
That game still exists. Let's hold out hope that that will be the opening of the season for the Yankees if they do settle soon.
Well, that's true. I mean, they only canceled the first 2 series. So far, opening day is still on. What are my odds that I'm going to get to see the New York Yankees on opening day?
Before Michael tells you that, because he's the man to guess that, can I ask you, how did you down in Georgia come to be such a big Yankee fan?
Joe Torre. When Joe Torre was the manager of the Atlanta Braves, of course, I was a Braves fan way back then, and I loved him. I thought he was a great manager. And when they fired him, we heard they fired him. I was so mad, and I've always followed Joe Torre and followed what he was doing. And when he became the manager of the Yankees, I can't say I was happy about it because, as you know, the Yankees killed the Braves in the World Series, once or twice?
Twice.
twice, yeah. But
during all that, though, I just became a huge Yankees fan. And for a long time, I would tell people, I love the Yankees and the Braves equally. And then a couple of years ago, something happened, and the Braves and the Yankees, however the game ended, was going to, if it ended one way, it was going to be good for the Yankees. The other way, it was going to be good for the Braves. And when I started watching the game, at first I was like, you know, I just want to see a good game.
And then you realized,
then I realized
you wanted the Yankees to win.
Yes. And so at that point I realized, okay, I truly am more a Yankees fan than a Braves fan.
Do you get the Yes Network down there?
No. Well, I could get the Yes Network, but it would cost me about $80 a month to get like the full package from DirecTV. But I do have the MLB app, and so I get to watch almost all the games.
You get to watch the games on Yes. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, but I don't get to watch the post game or the pregame, which really upsets me. And then, of course, I listen to y'all on the ESPN app.
That's going to really upset Bob Lorenz and Jack Curry and John Flaherty, I'll tell you that. Well, you asked me for a percentage, Darlene. I would say you probably have a 20% chance of that game happening.
Wow. Well, I'm still coming to New York because I still love New York, but it was a Christmas present to see the Yankees on opening day.
I guess we hope you get it.
Ain't going to happen.
You know what, Darlene? Yeah. You're just another example of the fans take the hit. You know, there are a lot of people, Peter. You know, let's just talk in our area right here that made longtime plans to go down to Port St. Lucie or just go down to Tampa to see the Mets or the Yankees, and they're stuck with tickets and hotel reservations and things like that. And they're the ones caught in the crossfire. I understand it. It's two parts of a business trying to get the best deal for each other, but the people that are the collateral damage are the fans. Not even collateral. The people that are the damage are the fans. I'm sure that there are a lot of people in Texas that wanted to see the Yankees on opening day, and then, you know, there's a lot of anticipation for the Yankees and the Astros, and that's gone.
Listen, I don't want to be morose, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't want to be dramatic. I don't
want
to be morose.
That's not you. Never.
Never has been, never will be. But there are people who are scheduled to see games in the first two series. They exist, who are not going to go because of this and are never going to go to a baseball game again. Like, maybe someone's 90 years old and then they died the next week. That was it. You took away the last memory of their baseball life.
Dear God.
I think that is being a little dramatic.
No.
No, it is.
Is it not possible?
Of course it's possible.
That's right. You're a little man.
Turns 92. Dear God.
So there. By the way, I wanted to mention this, and we'll talk about this with Don at 5 o'clock. So there are a crowd of people outside the Major League Baseball headquarters chanting Fire Manfred, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not here to defend Rob Manfred, but I will tell you this. Let's say that he was fired tomorrow. You think there'd be a deal? They'd bring somebody else. Dan Hallam, who does most of the negotiating, would still be working off orders from the owners.
Right. Nothing would change.
Nothing would change. So you've picked your villain. Good. Enjoy it. Hate him. Do whatever you want. He's your guy. But if you got what you want, all the people that are outside the baseball headquarters in Manhattan and screaming Fire Manfred, if he was fired, you'd still be in a lockout. The first two series would still be canceled, and they'd still have the same approach to negotiations that they have now, because this has not risen out of the imagination of Rob Manfred. He sits there and gets a consensus from the 30 owners about exactly what they want him to do. You're wasting your breath and your time and all of your hate. It should be used elsewhere. It's not to that man. He is a conduit for what the owners want. He's not dreaming this up on his own. How could people not realize that? Oh, it's for the good of baseball. Yeah, in your unicorn and rainbow land, they represent 30 owners. They don't represent 700 players. The Players Association represents the players. Rob Manfred represents the owners. And that's the way it was when Kennesaw Mountain Landis was the commissioner. They work for the owners. They get paid by the owners. They don't get paid by the players. Fire Manfred. You're wasting really valuable oxygen. and your day. That's how you're spending your day on a gorgeous day like this? You're standing out there with signs chanting Fire Manfred? Probably not even in that office. Whatever. Coming up, Dana White of UFC. And then remember, at 5 o'clock, Don LaGreca will rejoin us right here on the show. So stay tuned for all of that. Dana White is next on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Don LaGreca rejoins the show at 5 o'clock. You know that Don is so big now, Peter, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this. One of the top stories on the New York Post website is Don LaGreca returning to air.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Print that! Tweet that!
Yeah, and they are, and they did.
No, this is wrong. This is absolutely awful. The headline on the New York Post sports page, ESPN co-host returning to Michael K's show after hospitalization.
Wait, that's not true, is it?
Swear to God, your name's in it.
No way.
Yes.
That's awful.
Can I just throw this out there? Please, any of you people who do these things, who write articles or do headlines for a website, when someone's making a return from a health scare, they don't want their name to be co-host. They want their name. Don may not say it. He'll probably come back very modest. He can't have a rant about this, but I'm sick.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, boy. What a way to enter or re-enter the fray.
There he is. I hear him.
Our good buddy, our friend, our brother.
Wow, he's clapping already.
Hospitalized for a while with COVID pneumonia, but he is back. And as Greeny would say, hopefully better than ever.
Oh.
Don, welcome back. How you doing?
I got to take a second. I'm a little winded from clapping too much. You got to be careful.
My goodness.
Got to be careful. I'm a little nervous. I'll be honest with you because, you know, I usually the most comfortable place on the planet for me is behind the microphone. I'm confident. I'm sure of myself as far as, like, what I'm going to say and how I'm going to feel. But a little apprehension today. I don't really know what to expect. That's why I wanted to go in with a little prevention, a little 2 hours, see how it goes, then maybe do the full show tomorrow and Friday, sprinkle a little Rangers in on Friday, and I want to be able to pace myself here. So it's a weird feeling to be back and not kind of know that your body is going to be there with your mind. Mm. So hold my hand, guys. Hold my hand.
You look great.
I feel good.
How
but
much
I did
weight
lose
did
about
lose?
20 pounds, and now
wow.
My intention is to keep it off. Probably the worst part of this whole thing, I just had no appetite. And then the dream came, the sesame chicken dream.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I got to have me some of that. And we
wait,
talked
wait,
about it
was
it
a
on
real
the air.
Dream? You had an actual dream?
It came to me. Like, it was a vision, kind of.
Fever dream.
Yeah. It probably was. And that got me on the road to recovery there. But I don't want to put it all back. Feeling good. Got a lot of opinions, and I'm very, very excited. I'm going to dive back into the Rangers pre and post on Friday. I'll have my first game back next Thursday doing play-by-play.
Okay.
So
we got
a little
that on the Giannone calendar
tonight doing Rangers Blues. I miss it, but that's probably a little bit too much
aggressive
to bite off at this point.
Yeah. Now, before we get into your opinions, a
yes.
serious, serious question. I've not even asked you this off the air. When you were in the hospital or going into the hospital and you know, when you were going to the hospital, were you ever scared?
No. I was actually looking forward to getting some resolution because I never really felt from a COVID standpoint that I was any kind of death danger. Like I was able to breathe on my own. I was never on oxygen, you know, so I just wanted to know what was so wrong with me. Why was I having these fevers? Why was I having zero energy? So I knew I'd get answers at the emergency room. And as soon as they told me that I had COVID pneumonia, but I was okay, that the COVID wasn't that bad and my lungs were still functioning and I didn't need oxygen, it was just a matter of literally blasting the COVID out of me with antibiotics. And the doctor said that I needed to shed the COVID. And then I tested back-to-back negatives on Saturday and Sunday, and every day has been better since. But no, there was never that, like, you know, it's a lonely place, the hospital.
Yeah,
you know,
especially now when you can't bring anyone in there.
Right. I mean, you can't have any visitors. You're in a room by yourself. And, you know, there's always that feeling of, you know, this is the biggest feeling that I had, guys. Will it ever get back to normal? You know, will I ever feel right again? Will I ever be able to do the things that I did before. That was probably more of a fear than anything else, because when you don't feel right, you know, feeling good just seems like incomprehensible. But each day it got better. The doctors were with me. I talked to, three or four different viral disease doctors that were just trying to figure everything out. And really, it was a best-case scenario. So I'm feeling good. It's good to be back. Good to talk some sports with you guys. And thanks for everybody that that reached out. It was pretty awesome.
Did you while you were in the hospital, did you have a dream where you looked like you, but you went to you were at like a hotel for a business retreat, and your name was Kevin Finnerty?
No, there was nothing. Okay. Nothing like that. No.
Did you a little personal? Did you flirt with any nurse?
Wow.
I gotta tell you what. You know, you think about the porn nurse. The
yeah.
Thing
sure.
That, you know the.
It's a drop right away. He's already back to a drop. Back on the horse, Don.
It's not really COVID friendly.
Right.
You know, well, they come in basically in hazmat suits. So I was lucky I was able to tell you the sex of the nurse that came in.
Right.
Never mind whether there was any attractiveness, because they basically came in as if they were like in the final scene of E.T.
Any sponge bath involved?
I was Michael, it's like you read my mind.
Yeah.
I was going to say to quote
because you were weak.
To quote Biggie Smalls, the doctor said I need about 3 weeks for recovery. But the nurses is loving me, saying the best part of their day is my half, feeding me breakfast and giving me a sponge bath.
No, the only time the shirt was lifted was to give me shots in my stomach so I didn't get any blood clots.
Oh,
so
that's not fun.
No, but it was all right. Again, it was all to get to where I am.
Were you FaceTiming with the kids?
I didn't bring my iPad, remember?
You didn't have your iPad. No iPad.
Well, don't you have FaceTime on your phone?
Yeah.
You could have done it there.
Well, I didn't have FaceTime. I have a droid.
Why? So, why do you do that?
It's worked out for me.
Yeah,
what am I
you
supposed to go
agree.
Shopping for phones thinking, all right, what's hospital friendly?
Because I'm just saying that whenever we do a group text, you're always the green words. It's annoying.
All right, I'll change my phone.
Who's the people not on this show or in your family, who was the MVP of reaching out to check in on you?
That's not involved in the radio station?
No, yeah. No, not involved with this show. It could be radio.
Was easily Rothenberg.
Wow.
Really?
Easily Rothenberg. Dave was tremendous.
Really?
Every day texting, how you feeling? And he is the first guy, that's the MVP that springs to mind that was on top of everything.
Wow.
That was outside the show confines.
Well, because you know, you showed him up. You know, Dave had a pretty good bout with COVID, and you said, hold my beer.
Oh, yeah,
we're
right.
Let's check into a hospital here.
Yeah.
All right, so a lot has gone on, Don. I'm sure you've got a lot of opinions stored up. Let's start with baseball. First two series, we've been talking about it leading into this. First two series canceled. Thoughts?
I mean, I thought a lot about this over the last couple of weeks, and I've always been a management guy from the standpoint is I always was under the fallacy that even though they're billionaires, they've got a lot to lose, right? I mean, the players' contracts are guaranteed, but the owners are the one that truly put in the risk because they have a bad season, people don't show up, there's money to be lost. But, you know, reading everything that's going on right now, how do you not back the players? Because what it comes down to is a love of the sport. And I find it very difficult to believe that any owner can love baseball the way a baseball player could. And listen, there's always outliers. There's bad baseball players that only care about their paycheck and they don't care about the game and they don't care about the fans. But for the most part, when you think of the sacrifice that these players make to get to the level that they're at, and they're not all Max Scherzers or Manny Machados or Bryce Harpers or Aaron Judges. The overwhelming majority of ballplayers are guys that are living year to year, trying to stay at a AAA and AA, wondering if they're going to be able to stay in Major League Baseball. Sure, they make more money than the average person, but they've worked their tail off their entire lives to play this game. What billionaire cares that much? Majority of the billionaires are doing this as a tax write-off. The majority of these billionaires are moving around, moaning and groaning they can't be competitive, and in 5 years will sell the franchise for double what they paid for it, sometimes 10 times more than they paid for it. All right? It's a hobby to them. And these players make this ultimate sacrifice every single day of putting aside marriages and families and what is best for them just to be able to just make it to the major leagues. And they've been locked out. And they're the product. So it kind of disgusts me when we talk about billionaires versus millionaires. It's billionaires versus some millionaires.
Right.
You know, it's billionaires that are right now probably loving the fact there's no baseball in April because they end up losing money anyway. That, what, Michael, you'd say 75% of these owners probably don't even have the fact that they own a team in the first paragraph of their biography. Now, there's outliers. Hal Steinbrenner, it's the family business. John Henry looks like he really cares. But I'll be honest with you, I'm a Met fan. I'm glad that Steve Cohen is the owner of the team because he can put some money in the team. But really, honestly, is this his life? Is baseball his life? Or is it just something he does because he's a fan and he's got plenty of money to throw around? The way I bought my $6 million man doll last year so then I can play with him, put back on the shelf. But these ball players, think of what they go through. It's their life. It's everything they are. It's all their being to be a Major League Baseball player. And they're being locked out by guys, and some of them don't even care. So that really bothers me. And the pendulum has swung for me. And the other thing, Michael, not to get on you, but it's time to start paying attention to the people that say that they're done. Because this is not 20, 30 years ago. Baseball is not part of the national landscape like it always was. It's being overtaken by the NFL. It's starting in certain markets to be overtaken by the NBA. You know, in 1981, I was in tears as a 13-year-old because there was no baseball. Do you think of average 13-year-olds in tears there's going to be no baseball? Or are they going to go play their Xbox? Or are they going to watch soccer? Or are they going to watch the NBA and the NHL playoffs? Or just do nothing? You know, so we have to start paying attention. The 60-year-old's going to come back because it's in their psyche. It's ingrained in their soul.
Right.
But to the younger fan, to the Peter fan, who we kind of make fun of as just being like a fraud, Peter represents the overwhelming majority of people that baseball's trying to sell and to own. And they're being lost by dunks, and they're being lost by soccer, and they're being lost by just other things to do. So they've got to pay attention that this game is getting away from them even before the work stoppage. Too slow. Are they really getting the younger fans to care? You think this is going to help? So yeah, if the Yankees are battling for a World Series, of course the Yankee fan's going to come back. But how are they going to feel about it in Pittsburgh? How are they going to feel about it in Cincinnati? How are they going to feel about it around the country where there's other things to do and their team doesn't have a chance to win a bunch of ball games? So yeah, best case scenario, the Yankee fan's going to come back. But is it possible that Yankee fan had the Yankees at number one and maybe it's now number two or number three? They still care, but do they care as much as they cared before? We need to pay attention to these people and not discard them as, oh, don't worry about it. The heroin will be there for you when you recover, all right? You'll be able to inject it into your veins again. I'm not sure baseball's that drug that it was 30, 40 years ago, Michael. Did you think it was possible in 1981 we'd be having a conversation that baseball was third in this country? And none of it has to do with work stoppages, and now we sprinkle a little work stoppage on top of it?
Well, I mean, I would agree that it doesn't help, but I think that the people that you would lose, you didn't have that much of a grip on anyway. What I'm saying is the guy like Sal, who called in right before you came back, you know, he Con Ed kid, been at the stadium, goes to the stadium all the time. He's not going to watch the – he's 62 years old. He's going to stop because he's upset at what really is a business discussion. He's upset at two sides having a business disagreement. I think it stinks that they've canceled the games that they've canceled and they're not going to make it up. You know how I feel, but I believe that you'd be cutting off your nose just to spite your face. And I also agree that they do have a tenuous hold on the younger generation because the game is too slow. But that's a problem that was a problem before this
right.
lockout.
So instead of that getting worked on, we can't even get on the field. Yes, there are, Michael, they're never going to fully lose me. But like I mentioned before I got sick, you know, that 94 cancellation of the World Series, you know, it stung me. Now, I was helped by the fact that the Mets were awful. But what if the Yankees have another season like they've had over the last decade, where they finish as a wild card, make the playoffs, get bounced in the first round again? You don't think some of those fans are going to start to get frustrated and say, what am I doing here? And now they're not even playing. So, yeah, you paint the greatest scenario. They're competing for a World Series. I think Met fans are going to be all in because it's been a while since they've been this good. But if they get off to a slow start, Michael, what's the attitude going to be? It's not air like it was before, Michael. That's the problem. There's plenty of other competition. But just getting on the field would be a great start. And, boy, was Monday just an absolute disaster. What a disaster. To be that close, Michael,
but
and have it pulled
now,
out from underneath you.
Now it was portrayed as that close. I wonder if it really was.
No, that's and where does that come from?
That was from the owners.
That comes from the owners to try to paint the players as the bad guys. You know, I'll give the players credit, Michael. They're unified. Probably more unified than any union, not only in sports, but union period in this country. Has anybody... All the players in Major League Baseball, and how many are represented by the union, Michael? Close to 1,000, probably?
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody spoke out against what's going on? Has there been anybody to say anything? And you so eloquently said it when I was away, Michael. Max Scherzer, guy's already, you know, a millionaire how many times over? He's down to the last few years of his earnings, and he's there fighting for what he believes is right. From a moralistic standpoint, how do you back the owners? How do you do it?
A lot of fans feel that way, though, because as we've said over and over again, a lot of fans feel, well, I could be a player. Well, you couldn't be. If you could, you would be. And they can identify more with the players. So they, you know, because we hear it on with our job. Well, I'd do that show for nothing.
Well,
until you see somebody making money off of it.
But here's the thing, Michael, is that nobody knows who John Henry is. You know, a lot of Hal Steinbrenner could probably walk down Times Square and not be noticed. But you know who is noticed and you know who represents the owners? Rob Manfred. How's he looking right now on social media? How's he looking right now to the average fan? He's looking like a buffoon, to be honest with you.
Which I think is unfair.
Well, you could think that.
He's doing the bidding for the owners.
I understand he's doing the bidding for the owners, but part of being a commissioner is to be able to communicate your message. Has he done that well?
No, the laughing was not a good idea.
No, I mean, so these are the thing. You know, Bud Selig was a guy, Michael, that came across as a guy that had no idea what he was doing. We'd be in so much better shape if he was the commissioner, because at least he'd be talking to the small market teams as an owner himself of a small market team to try to figure out some headway here. Now, listen, maybe it's unfair, Michael, but hey, listen, all's fair in love and war, and right now it's all about perception, and you see a unified front. And nobody knows who the owners are, but they know who the commissioner is. And whether it's what happened with the Astros scandal or describing the trophy as a piece of tin or yucking it up while Rome is burning, not great looks.
Well, Peter, I'm going to throw this out here. All right, so Don is a pitcher, right, who's just been out for a year and a half with Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. And you kind of assume that the first time he's on a mound, he's not going to really let it go full throttle. He just went and threw 65 straight 95-mile-an-hour fastballs.
I'm sorry.
He didn't ease in.
I'm sorry that I'm passionate.
No, first at bat, first pitch clock, they look and they go, well, they're worried he won't get into the 90s again. First pitch, they look, it's 94.
Right, right. And then each subsequent pitch is faster.
Right, and now he's up to 97.
I win!
I hope he doesn't blow the elbow out again. That's what I'm saying.
Got to be careful.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I'm starting to feel comfortable.
Well, that's important. All right, let's see what you all think about what Don just said. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. Donnie's back right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
You think about the porn nurse.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The family's back together.
Reunited.
Again. And it feels so good.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Reunited.
Peaches and Herb.
That's right.
Yeah. Or Herb.
I think it's Peaches and Herb.
It is. It is. Sorry. Let's go to Mike in West Caldwell. Mike.
Hey, guys. What's up? Don, welcome back. Peter, Mike. What's going on? Listen, part, I think, all the problems with baseball over the years has been lots of different things. And I think one of them, too, is over the years they sold out a generation of kids that watched the games all season long and then put them on too late for them to watch when the playoffs or World Series come. They can't even stay awake on the East Coast. I mean, they have never – early on they play them early because they have to. But the deeper that you go, you can't even stay awake. I can't stay awake and watch these games. They're on so late. I mean, that is just another little piece of the puzzle. It's not just one thing. They have chipped away at this beautiful game until it's almost going to be ash. I'm sorry, man. It's lacrosse is killing it. I mean, there's so many different things that go into this when you want to just throw all the pieces of the puzzle onto the table. You just put it together, and you're going to see it's going to be – it's dying.
Mike, lacrosse is killing baseball?
For kids. The kids, instead of playing – not watching it, but instead of playing baseball, right, a lot of these kids are playing lacrosse. It's quicker. I mean, Mike,
and you can get a college scholarship.
But that's the point I was making earlier, though. The point I was making, I don't like that as a reference point, Michael, and a referendum on why to worry about baseball. Because since I was a child, everyone I knew played soccer.
Right.
Only some kids played baseball. I played both, but everyone played soccer. Right. So I don't think the youth games is a sign of the issues. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing it with maybe national ratings. You don't see it with local ratings, and you're seeing it with people's complaints about the game in general.
We're digging too deep. Because really, honestly, how many kids under the age of 16? What percentage, honestly, do you think ever put on a helmet, shoulder pads, and went and played organized football?
You're absolutely right.
Less than 50? Honestly, there's some high schools that don't have football. Now they might play with a Nerf ball on the street, a little two-hand touch, a little flag football. But what percentage of children in this country, with all the worries about concussions and how expensive it is, put on shoulder pads, a helmet, go out there and play organized football? I'm sure it's way less than 50%. And yet football is a monster, a beast. The fact is there's a lot of games. There's a lot of competition now. When I was growing up, I don't know about you, Peter, but definitely you, Michael. In your neighborhood, everybody you knew had a favorite baseball team, favorite football team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had some basketball fans, some hockey fans, but let's face it, they were outliers. But growing up in the 70s, everybody had a favorite baseball team, everybody had a favorite football team, at least in my neighborhood. Now, as you grow older, I'm sure everybody's got a favorite football team, but baseball? I bet you they probably have a favorite basketball player or a favorite basketball team, which is something that was maybe a non-entity 30, 40 years ago. There's a lot more competition. And let's face it, as much as we love baseball, baseball is a very cerebral sport. It's chess. And the other games are like playing Half-Life. So it's a different world, and that's fine. Because baseball's taking hits, but it's still fine. Still flush with cash, as you like to say. It's still a very popular sport. You just got to kind of learn to find your groove and try to make the necessary changes so it doesn't fall any deeper than it has.
the one of the problems that, you know, the caller brought up is that everybody is trying to get the most money right now, and they don't think that far in advance because a lot of the owners are transient. They're not going to own the teams forever. Not going to be like the Steinbrenners that, who have, you know, owned it for a couple of generations since 1973. But if you took a little less money from Fox, right, then you could start the games at 7:30. You could. And they don't. They choose not to. They choose to get the most money they could get. And the most money they could get, Fox is going to want to start the game at 8:30 because then you're going to get the people on the West Coast at 5:30. They don't want to start it at 7 o'clock. They don't want to start it and knock off, you know, go up against Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy. They don't want to do it. But starting it at 9 o'clock, 8:30, it does, and the game's now a four-hour game.
That's
most people don't see it.
See, that's the problem. Even if, Michael, even if you started at 7 o'clock, what are the chances that, you know, that a 12-year-old kid's going to be able to watch the game till it's over?
Right. And what would be the harm of spending, taking a little less money, right, and having at least one World Series game in the afternoon? Even if you started at 4 o'clock. Don't have to start it at 1.
Well, and could we? And how about 4 o'clock on a Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, why can't
TV.
It be on a – well, obviously in October you don't want to do Sunday.
Right. Okay.
You're telling me that in October you couldn't do an afternoon game on a Saturday? Listen, I know college football is pretty popular.
But it's popular at night too.
But, you know, I'm sure you'd see a lot of those games get shifted at night. And baseball, you start a game at 3 o'clock.
Now, Travis Sawchuk, who is an MLB writer for The Score, just tweeted out something interesting. The MLB attendance declines following work stoppages that cost games. In 1972, minus 3.7% attendance. 1981, minus 6.8%. 1995, minus 20%.
Holy crap.
Per game attendance didn't recover the pre-strike average until 2006. But they're looking at this and saying, well, what we want is more valuable than that, I guess. That's got to be what they say, right? Before we break, here is the cut about Jeff Passan saying, you know, whether or not, okay, this is a bad time to be having this happen. Here was Jeff's answer yesterday.
I think there's always the ability to look outside of the bubble that you've ensconced yourself in and acknowledge what's going on there. I also think that when it comes to business, that is weakness. And it's a callous thing to say, right? Like, how can we not look at what's going on in the world? But, Michael, the reality is there are terrible things happening in the world all the time. And I am really hopeful that's what's happening in Ukraine right now does not evolve into something worse than it already is, which is absolutely horrendous. And that it doesn't have a more demonstrable effect on the world than it is already. But I don't think either side right now is looking at that and taking it into account, because I think the other side will jump on that and try and leverage it as best it can. And in negotiations like this, where leverage is really the name of the game, you don't want to give up anything.
There you have it. Very cruel, very harsh, very black and white, but very real. That's why what's happening in the world does not impact these discussions and will not move either side off their stated desire to get the deal that they want. ENN's coming up in just a moment. Please stay tuned for that. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Biggest drop-offs, we were talking about Brady to Gabbert. How about Aikman to Quincy Carter, said Mike P.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It's not
fun
the same
with
level.
Numbers goes Marino to Jay Fiedler.
I would argue.
Fiedler? I don't know.
Yeah, Jay Fiedler. Uh-huh. I would argue that both of those are short of this.
I agree.
Because Brady is better than both, and Gabbert is worse than both.
Incarcerated Bob mentions, and so does big-time show listener Paul, a verbal calerver, that we didn't even mention Hakeem in the top 10.
I was thinking about him.
And William Curry goes, love TMKS, but they are clueless when it comes to this topic. Steph is an all-time great shooter. He's not a top 10 player of all time.
Wait. Clueless. We're talking about somebody else's argument, Yo-Yo.
And also,
how are we clueless? Chris Russo and Stephen A. Smith, You could live 10 lifetimes and not even reach the talent those two guys have in their pinky toe. And Clueless, get a life, please.
He's back. He's fully back.
My God. And the fact that I don't have my backing from my partners is gutless from the doing.
Wait, he should be right there marching with me.
What are you saying?
Marching with me.
Oh! You're clueless on this subject.
Hey, Michael,
I think you guys are clueless on this subject.
By the way, Michael.
He hasn't been humbled at all by being in a hospital.
No, he's still an animal.
Stop it. No.
Jackass.
He would know what it did. What showed me is that we're only on this spinning orb once. And I get called clueless, and I'm supposed to just take it because it's from a yo-yo?
You're going
to
be screaming.
No, you want to dance with the devil? You dance with the devil. And the devil tells you that, first of all, we're not even the ones that were supposed to be clueless. Two icons of the industry were clueless. Go back to mailing. Go back to stuffing envelopes.
What?
Go back to mailing. Wow.
Michael, real quick, I'm surprised you didn't get to this earlier.
March with me.
I'm surprised. My Maryland Terrapins reportedly in heavy pursuit of Iona's Rick Pitino.
Now, Rick has said he's staying in Iona. He said on the show, but then earlier this year, a little bit of a caveat, unless they don't continue, you know, the support that they've always given us.
Now, guys, tell me if am I wrong or am I right? Maryland, with regard to something that's kind of sexy to bring you back, That's a big program. That's trying to get back after it. It's hard to turn down.
Now, I love when people with power really swing it around. Don's been telling me for years that I should, but I don't think I have the power, so I don't. You see what Larry David did?
I you know, this was listed in yesterday's ENN, Michael, and we got too carried away.
It is one of the most unbelievable swing it arounds of all time. So, Don, HBO has been promoting, you know, essentially the story of Larry David, a two-part, I guess it's documentary-like.
Right.
And it was supposed to be today and yesterday. Or maybe just, it was supposed to debut today.
Today, yep.
And the day before, Larry goes that, you've seen him say it on Curb, nah, don't think so. He pulled it. He said he wants to do it live.
I got to tell you.
So this whole thing was produced, it was promoted. It was done, and he pulled it.
Can you explain to me what he's talking about? Like, I love Larry, but does he mean he just wants a live premiere?
No. He wants to do the actual show. I guess he's interviewing a lot of the show, maybe show clips and everything, and he wants to do it live in front of an audience.
Hmm.
And because HBO is so beholden to him, he's been so great for them, they said, oh, okay.
But hold on. Oh, but I thought this was like a doc.
It is.
But that doesn't it like cut to interviews with him?
Yes. So maybe they'll do it on stage. Maybe he'll ask me to interview him.
So it says in the doc, Larry was expected to sit down for a pre-filmed conversation with Larry Charles to discuss comedy, fame, his life, etc. And snippets of their talk were featured in the documentary's original trailer.
Right.
While the talk was expected to walk through David Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm fame, HBO said it would also feature insight into Larry's childhood as an unfunny Brooklyn kid, as well as his role as a parent. I'm just confused about how you do this live.
Yeah, I
don't really get it. But
my knee-jerk reaction is this is a huge mistake. But he's Larry David, so he gets the benefit of the doubt, and he'll end up being right, but doesn't sit well as a live event. Well, march with me!
He's done this before. He talked about this on Center Stage. There was a time he came out in a comedy club. A whole large group of people there looked around and said, nah, I don't think so. I walked off, and that was it. Didn't perform.
And by the way, they made fun of that on an episode of Curb.
Right.
When he walks out of the meeting over the chicken, over the shrimp missing from his meal. And when he walks out, you know, they go, there he goes! This is what he's famous for!
Yep.
You know, like, so his desire to pull the plug is part of his charm.
This is going to be, I mean, talk about like coming back big, right?
Go back to mailing.
Listen to this. It's almost LT-like.
Go back to mailing.
Gobacting mailing.
Gobacting mailing. Which is very reminiscent
of. All right, bud.
Hold on.
Gobacting mailing. Go back to stuff in envelopes.
I don't know if we can do this, Michael, because this is a man who's coming off of the IR, okay?
Right. Yeah.
The IL, whatever you want to call it. And here he is, and he's having a physical, it sounded like a physical problem. And it's already a gut-busting, hilarious drop. Don, are you comfortable with this?
Yeah.
Go back to mailing.
Go back to mailing.
Really, you want to dance with the devil? You dance with the devil.
I got to tell you, Andrew, early thoughts. I mean, really an immediate reaction. What kind of seed could go back to mailing be?
It might be the one, honestly.
It might be the one.
This will live forever. This will be played. If this show still exists 10 years from now, it will still be getting played. Legendary.
I do appreciate Peter's initial response to, hey, give Don a break. But you know what? When you come back, you jump in the fire.
You go back to mailing.
Backing mailing. Wow. Let's towel off after that, shall we?
We need to.
Because a lot has been done, a lot has been said, and there's much left to say and do right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.